T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to the Damon Brew Show. Great to have you here this Tuesday afternoon. We got a lot coming up this hour, but before we go any further, we're bringing in, I think, the man who is best prepared to put this Game 7 in this series in the time capsule. No one has done a better job covering every lick of LeBron James's career, and no one, I think, does a better job covering the NBA than ESPN's Brian Windhorst. Thanks so much for coming on with us for a little season recap. Brian, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a heck of a season. I think what we can all agree on is that it was incredible entertainment, one of the best NBA seasons based on the ratings and based on the interest and based on the stuff that we saw happen. Really a great NBA season. If we could get this every year, regardless of whether your team won or lost, I think you'd sign up for it for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of disappointment with the way that it finished here, but I'm telling you, as the time grows between the loss of Game 7 and we get a little perspective and you start calming down and you catch your breath, that was one of the most relevant regular seasons of NBA basketball we've ever seen. Normally you spend from Christmas on saying, all right, let's fast forward to the playoffs. The Warriors made the regular season matter, maybe even a little too much, ultimately. But it was one heck of a ride. You know, where do you think it went wrong from the Warriors? We'll figure out the Cavs here in just a second. But what do you think was the fatal flaw, the Achilles heel of the run?
I think there was a number of things. They got behind against Oklahoma City and had to play so hard to finish that series off. I think that as the finals wore on, I felt like it looked to me like the Warriors players started showing more fatigue than the Cavs players. I think that was a factor that they had to play two hard series in a row. I think there was guys going down. You know, you lost Bogut. Iguodala banged up. Curry not 100%. The Draymond suspension. For the Cavs to win the series, they were going to need some things to go their way. And there was attrition. Not only Draymond getting suspended, but, players started falling off. I also felt like the Warriors' weaknesses, and there's just not that many of them, but the Warriors' weaknesses they came to light. You may not believe this, but I was saying as far back as 3 or 4 months ago that I thought, as good as Draymond was, one of the weaknesses that he had was that he had an inability to control his temper at times, and could that work against the Warriors? And it did. And if there's one flaw with Steph, it's that he gets careless with the ball at times. Regardless of whether he shot the ball well or not, there was just times where he got careless with the ball. And most of the time, one of the things that was so impressive about the Warriors throughout the year was their margin for error was enormous. The amount of things that they could withstand, the amount of things that teams could throw at them and they could still figure out a way to win. I've never seen a team with a larger margin for error. And that's why I think it made sense for the Warriors to be the favorite all the way through. But with each one of those little breaks in the dam, the injuries, the suspensions, the turnover issues, the slumps, their margin for error shrunk and shrunk and shrunk some more, and it ended up being nil at the end. And it was very surprising, but that's why we play these games, to see how this stuff plays out.
Brian Windhorst from ESPN here on 95.7 The Game. Look, I don't know enough about Tyronn Lue to tell you what he is or isn't as a coach, but what I did see is he knows when to call those timeouts. I thought he did a great job silencing any momentum the Warriors got from the crowd in Game 7. 5-0 run, 7-0 Warrior run. He was quick to the timeout, where I really thought Kerr did a terrible job playing his timeouts at the end of that game. Not only did he need to reel his team in, get them to focus, the final 4 minutes were an utter collapse, and he did nothing to coach them through it. We talked yesterday, one of the themes of the show was, let them play through it and figure it out. Not exactly the best Game 7 strategy, because if they don't figure it out, that's it. I was impressed by how Lue controlled the pace of that game and was stunned to see Kerr let it get away.
Well, look, Steve's, his instincts have been right, like, a way high percentage of the time. You know, I think you'll ride with Steve and what he's done with this team. I do think that one of the things that the Cavs were able to do is they were able to keep the Warriors close. I think the most the Warriors led by in any of the last three games, I think, was 8 points, somewhere in that neighborhood. Maybe I'm not 100% right on that. I know it was 7 points against the, in game five. And I think the Warriors, the most the Warriors led by in game seven was 8. And so we all know that once the Warriors get downhill on you, you know, that incredible record when it gets to 15, I thought the Cavs just did a great job. You know, there would be times where Steph or Clay would hit great threes Draymond would hit a three. And then you'd see Kyrie Irving come flying down at the other end and, you know, get a quick basket. And sometimes the Warriors were hitting threes and the Cavs were hitting twos. I remember there was one sequence, I believe in game five, you know, where the Warriors hit threes like on three or four straight possessions, and the Cavs hit twos on those possessions. And so the Warriors built a little bit of a lead because three is more than two. But they didn't let it be a 12-0 run. They made it like a 12-8 run.
Right.
So the Cavs did a great job of just maintaining, because once you get on the wrong side at Oracle, you can't recover. And I thought, you know, whether it was the timeouts or whether it was just keeping your head down and keep playing, I think that the Cavs did a good job of that.
Yeah, I watched Game 7 sitting next to your ESPN colleague, Amin El-Hassan, and I told him, you know, usually the Warriors win every game or they lose or it becomes a game in like the first 8 minutes of the first quarter. Like there's either a 12-point deficit and here we go, and the Warriors are locked in and you got to chase them all night and good luck with that, or a basketball game's about to happen. You could see early on a basketball game was coming your way in Game 7. Look, Brian, you started covering the Cavaliers back in the early 2000s. You were there for the early LeBron days. You were there as LeBron left, became the number one public enemy outside of Art Modell in Cleveland. You follow him to Miami. He comes back to Cleveland, and now this. Did you think he was going to accomplish this? Everyone thought he never saw the Warriors coming. The scope of the league changed around him, and he might have cast his chips on a bad bet, even though it's a great story going back to Cleveland. How surprised are you that he really wrote the Disney movie?
Yeah, when they were down 3-1, I mean, I actually felt like when they were down 3-1, the series wasn't over, because I felt like they could fight back. But I didn't think they were going to win. I didn't think they were going to win three in a row. I thought he might be able to get it to seven. I didn't think it. And I agree, Damon. I didn't think that LeBron saw the Warriors coming when he came to Cleveland. The Cavs, if they could have foreseen the Warriors, would not have traded for Kevin Love. They may have traded Andrew Wiggins, but they may have traded him for someone else, because that's not a good matchup for them. You know, he doesn't fit into the ideal placement to play the Warriors. So they had to overcome a lot. And look, in this series, if you play this series 10 times, the Warriors might win at 7 or 8. But that's why you play it, and that's why you play it out. And there have been other times, you know, in 2011, this series reminded me of so much of 2011, Damon, because that was when the Heat played the Mavericks.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Heat were, you know, probably the better team. They were the favorite, and they had home court advantage. And they had, you know, Wade Bosch and LeBron, and they got ahead in that series 2-1, and it was like, okay, they've got it. And Dirk just kept going, just kept coming at them. And I remember when the Heat went home after game five and they were down 3-2, there was still a feeling that they were going to get their home games because they're the Heat and, you know, they're loaded. And Dirk was just like, nope, I got these dudes. I figured them out. And he did. He put the dagger in them in game six. And the circumstances were different, but I feel like the same thing. I feel like if you played that Mavericks Heat series the 10 times over, the Heat might take it 7 or 8 times.
Right.
But that particular time, the way it all played out, the Mavericks figured it out. The old veteran who was the MVP got it done. And I think that's what happened here. LeBron figured it out, got it done. And his seasoned experience and his ability to control a game like Dirk's really played out. You may not get the Warriors again in a year. Having gone through this experience, they may be more hard to handle a year from now. The Mavericks were never the same team after that. But for that point in time, they were, and that's what the case with the Cavs here.
Brian Windhorst from ESPN, and, you know, it's never too early to start looking ahead. You just brought up Dirk. We saw Tim Kawakami write a story that the Warriors might have some interest in Dirk Nowitzki, who became an unrestricted free agent today. Obviously, Kevin Durant's the big name that everyone's been talking about since a year ago. I mean, he's not going to sneak up on anybody. Joakim Noah is a name that we've seen. As you look at the Warriors' offseason, what do you think happens? Let's start with Harrison Barnes.
Well, what an amazing situation for the Warriors to be in. You know how Adam Silver talked about unintended consequences of the new CBA? This is an unintended consequence that, you know, the best team in the league has cap space. It's not supposed to be this way. And not only that, just because they've done a great job of managing their high talent players. They've got them in all of them are in good contracts. It's amazing that Draymond, Clay, and Steph, none of them are on max contracts. And not even Clay, who his contract was just a little bit below a max. Just brilliant job by Bob Myers. So they have this incredible flexibility. Now, I can't tell you what's in Dirk Nowitzki's head. I don't know. I can't tell you what's in Kevin Durant's head. I don't know. I know that for anybody to want to leave their team, it would take an extraordinarily compelling situation. And the Warriors may fit that. The only thing I will say about the Durant chase, I would personally find it hard to believe. That's just my opinion. I'm not reporting on it. But knowing what I know about the way the league works, I would find it very hard to believe that Kevin Durant, a $300 million Nike guy, would go play with Under Armour's leading guy. The Under Armour-Nike rivalry right now is as intense as it's ever been, and Kevin Durant's loyalty his highest loyalty is to the people who have given him a $300 million deal. So I would be surprised if he did that. And I know that's not a factor that people think about, but that is a real factor that exists in the world. So maybe not. Maybe he's like, screw this. I don't care about my shoe. I want to go play with the best team. Maybe he would consider that. The tough thing for the Warriors is people are going to realize that they're in a hard place with Azili and Barnes, and they're not going to be able to sit around for 10 days to figure it out. They're not going to be able – they're going to have to make a decision right away because the moratorium is shorter than it's ever been. It's only 5 days. And so somebody can come in there on July 1st and put the Warriors to the test with Barnes and Azili, and they may not have time to see if they can get Joakim Noah or Dirk Nowitzki. I think Al Horford would be an incredible fit for the Warriors. I don't know if they feel that way. I've not heard that, but if you're going big game hunting, I think Al Horford should be on your list as well. The difficulty they're going to have is they're not going to have the 10 days
right
to figure it out like they would have in the past.
Speaking of big game hunting, Brian, is anybody looking at Harrison Barnes like a 10-point buck anymore?
Yeah, it's a question. I mean, I think the thing with Harrison Barnes is he may be gettable. And so that's why he's so attractive, is that because you know the Warriors have other commitments, you only go after a restricted free agent if you think there's a chance you could get him. And it may be worth paying a penalty, a higher freight, to steal him away. I mean, there are teams out there that are not going to even be able to spend their salary cap space. There's nobody to give it to. It's straight supply and demand. So the question is not whether Harrison Barnes is a $20 million a year player. This particular summer, that is not the case. It is he a $20 million player in this market? The salary cap is headed towards $100 million, okay? They are not making more players per team. There are still going to only be 15 guys per team. The players are just going to get paid more. And at the front end of it, a guy like Harrison Barnes could benefit from the most of it. So that is going to be a difficult call, and I'm sure the Warriors have thought about it. I'm sure they have the number in mind that they're willing to match, and we'll see how disciplined they are with it.
Yeah, we love talking with him. He was a weekly guest on the show, and I'm sure you know Harrison Barnes is about as interesting a guy as you can talk to in the NBA. He's thoughtful. He's inquisitive. I loved talking to him. As a player, there's a lot that I think, a lot of questions still to be answered there. And it's funny, when you create relationships with guys, even false media relationships, it affects kind of, you know, like it's tough for me to say, God, he stunk in the finals. But he stunk in the finals. It kind of happened, you know? Do you have a good relationship with LeBron? Do you have any relationship with LeBron? I mean, you guys, I think, are as linked as maybe any reporter and athlete since, what, Cosell and Ali? At least that's what it's like in my mind. Do you guys ever have a personal moment at all together, or are you now media enemy?
Well, look, yeah, LeBron and I know each other. I mean, we know each other's families. I mean, I get on his nerves occasionally. He gets on my nerves occasionally. we've been through the complete ringer with each other. I try to leave him alone as much as possible. You know, like, I know what sort of demands are placed on his time media-wise, and I don't go talk to him on a daily basis anymore. I did that for a long time. But when I have something I want to talk to him about, I go talk to him. I don't need to chase every single story with LeBron like I used to. I did that for a long time, and now my job has changed. And I know, frankly, I've bothered him enough, and he's bothered me. He's bothered me enough. But I can tell you that having been with him with the Heat and having been with him for this, those Heat championships were extraordinarily important to him. But this is the achievement of his career. The way he felt, the emotion that he showed both in front of the cameras and behind the scenes was of another level. He completed his career with this. It's, you know, obviously I will continue to watch him with a critical eye. Obviously I will continue to say and write things he doesn't like. But as far as I'm concerned, the rest of his career is gravy, free roll, house money, call it whatever you want. He's completed what he set out to do. And I appreciate it because I know how hard he's worked to do it.
Hey, I know how hard you work and what your media demands are, and we appreciate you, like I told you, somewhere under the stands at Oracle Arena. Thanks always for being good to this show. You always get back to us, whether you can or can't come on with us. Really appreciate the job you do and how good you are to us. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You too, Brian Windhorst here. And I see on the text line as we were talking, and I see on my own phone some texts that are coming to me. Guy here on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line says, Kevin Durant won't play for the Warriors because of Under Armour? Come on, man. That's just stupid. No. No, it's not. It's actually more in play and more realistic than you could ever imagine. And it's not stupid. It's actually something that only someone deeply in the know would even come up with. Kevin Durant works for Nike almost more than he works for the NBA. Now, obviously, one springboards him to the other. You don't get the shoe contract without being in the NBA. But he has a $300 million deal with Nike. And if you don't think that that doesn't factor into his decisions, you're crazy. Of course it does. Now, Windhorst didn't say it automatically disqualifies it from happening, but it's a roadblock that at some point needs to be overcome. I would say if it were really an issue, it's time for Steph to get the hell out of Under Armour and sign with Nike and get Kevin Durant there. By the way, Angel Pagan just hit a grand slam. And then a solo home run followed it. Connor Gillespie. A boom. Giants leading Pittsburgh 7-0. We're going to have John Morosi talk to us at 6 o'clock, getting you ready for a little A's baseball coming up tonight here on 95.7 The Game. We're going to have a Tuesday trifecta coming up soon. We've got way too many people on hold, and we're going to have to hang up on some of you. I'm sorry. That's just kind of the way it goes. Let's try to get as many of these calls up and in as we can. But look, I think it's a very good point. It's an astute point. Yeah. Now, I would hope that Kevin Durant would say, look, Nike, doesn't matter that I'm playing next to your arch rival brand ambassador. If I win a title, that's good for biz.
Absolutely.
You could even almost make it a cool on-court rivalry between teammates. Who's got the hotter kicks? Steph could use a little boost these days, apparently. I still don't know what the big deal is. If you want an all-white sneaker, what more can you have than an all-white sneaker? Anyway, let's go to Safe at Third. Safe, what do you got?
Hey, Damon. You know, I got to get in your church, man. You've got an excellent church. You're preaching all the right stuff, man. I want to be in your pulpit.
Hey, well, you are. You're in the choir right now, man. You are in the congregation.
Great show. Absolutely great, man. That's why I listen. Let me just say this. I'm not going to go like all the other callers who have their point and they have their opinions, they're right to them. I want to go to the future because the future is everything, and the future is so up for for the Warriors. Man, I'm excited. Waiting to see who they're going to get in the draft. Waiting to see how they're going to put all this together. You've got probably the greatest management team in NBA right now. A lot of teams envy. Let me tell you, Warriors fans, which I'm not. I'm a way back Knicks fan, forlorn Knicks fan from the 60s. Let me tell you guys, it's going to get better. It hurts now, but it won't hurt.
Hey, look at it this way. The Warriors used to be so irrelevant, you couldn't even find an emotion that hurt this much. I mean, lost in the woods for 16, 18 years in a row, however many it was, that you couldn't even get into dumb, you know, it couldn't even be a playoff team. Like, these kinds of problems are officially very nice around here. And it is amazing. A buddy of mine who's a big Cavs fan, you know, said to myself, you know, he's like, these Warrior fans act like that they don't know losing as well as any fan base in the world after one championship. And I'm like, you're right. You're right. There's definitely some don't even know how to handle success group of the fan base out there. It gets a little too cocky way too quick. Well, this humbled you. This absolutely is a little humbling. Damon, why can't Kevin Durant just sign with Under Armour? Because Nike gave him $300 million. That's why. It's a contract. Contracts are things that lawyers look at, and once you sign them, they actually mean something. Everybody gets 10 seconds, and I'm going to try and get to these calls. No more. I grew up a nostalgia phone call. Got to make your point. Got to run. Garrett in San Francisco. What do you got, Garrett?
Hey, what's happening? Glad that you said something about the humility. That's what I was on hold for. Not a Warrior fan, but I really hope that this teaches the team that this will be better for the Warriors team because they're so young and so good. And I really hope that this teaches them and the fans, especially the cocky ones, in the words of Chuck Daly to the Dream Team, anybody can get beat.
It's the truth. It's the absolute truth. It's not as in any given Sunday league because you never play one game only on Sunday. You got a series, and a series allows normal to take place more than it allows chaos to thrive. But chaos thrived at the end of the finals for the Golden State Warriors, and they did not thrive in that chaos. Justin in Danville. Justin.
Hey, Damon, how you doing? I'll make my point quick. So pretty much I wanted to call and tell everybody one thing. 73 wins completely matters. You know, when Jimmy has the record book out 50 years from now and his grandfather's talking about the Warriors, he's going to say 4 or 5 championships and the most wins in a season in basketball history. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Look, it does matter. It is a definite – it's a feather in the cap. But unfortunately, you're not allowed to wear that cap outside and brag about it. It is. Isn't that the best way to say it? 73 wins is a feather in your cap. Don't ever let me catch you wearing that hat. Isn't that where we are?
I mean, yeah, it's just
if I walk into Oracle and I see 73 hanging from the ceiling, I will mock that banner the same way I mock Turkey on the 50. Like, what the hell are you doing?
It's just like you're at the top of the mountain. You fell so far down.
I don't want to see a 73 win banner in that damn building next season. I do not. Let that be a warm memory. Don't put it in. I don't need. Let it be a memory in my mind, not in the ceiling, because the only thing I'm going to see looking at that banner is the last 4 minutes with the Warriors stepping on their own cranks. Which is a medical word for penis. I'm sure of it. No more calls. Guys, stop screening calls. Danny, take over. Because we're about to hang up on everybody on hold. I'm so sorry. Because we have to flush and clear the lines for a Tuesday trifecta, which I'm about to set up for you right here and now. Been teasing it all afternoon. And I think you're going to find this a good thing. You can even ask the callers on hold if they would like to stay on hold for the trifecta. If it's no, we got to go in another direction. Our Tuesday trifecta topic today is reason. Reason. Could use a little reason in the world of sports, don't you think? I do. What do you think is the biggest reason the Warriors lost? I don't want a long paragraph. Surmise it quickly. What's the biggest single reason? Not your, well, it started with the suspension, then it was, you get, no. One lever to pull. What do you think is the single biggest reason the Warriors lost the NBA Finals? Question number 2. And I dedicate this one to Skip Bayless, whose product I think makes the conversation harder to have as adults. I don't get Skip Bayless. And someone's like, Damon, you like Colin Cowherd, but you don't like Skip Bayless, and that makes you a hypocrite. Look up what the word hypocrite means. You're not even close. Colin Cowherd might bloviate, might say things to get people to pay attention to his show, but most of what he says is based in logic and reason. Skip Bayless is a clickbait whore of the first degree who will still write Tebow so you write about him. Like, I'm not hoping that you will walk away from this show going, that guy is such a jackass. I want to do a webpage dedicated to what a jackass he is. And look, maybe Skip Bayless can victory lap his paycheck around me. But you know what I would victory lap around him? Sounding like an adult to other adults and not being dismissible just based on the fact I'm breathing words from my mouth. Like, if Skip Bayless is talking, that is automatically the number one qualifier of subjects I'm not interested in. So I will ask you, why do you think, hopefully you don't think I am, why do you think unreasonable sports pundits thrive? It's kind of a deep question, right? But why? What is it about someone going, I think Tim Tebow is better than Peyton Manning? Why does that appeal to the masses the way that it does? Our third and final question for the topic of reason is, who do you think is the most reasonable person in the media? Sports media, big media, whatever. Who do you think it is? That's our Tuesday trifecta. When we come on back, we're going to start taking your calls. 888-957-9570. Our Tuesday trifecta topic is reason. What do you think is the biggest reason the Warriors lost? Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive? And who is the most reasonable person in the media? 888-957-9570. It is the Tuesday trifecta. Ask for it by name. Accept no substitutions. What's the biggest reason the Warriors lost? Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive? Who is the most reasonable person in the media today? Can't wait to hear your opinions on all of these. It's coming up next on the Tuesday trifecta.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
And suddenly over the loudspeaker I heard...
Trifecta.
Triple.
Trifecta.
With a triple.
Trifecta.
It's the Tuesday trifecta. One topic, three questions. Now, here's Damon Bruce.
It's Tuesday trifecta time here on 95.7 The Game, and it feels like it's been a couple weeks since we've had one of these with all of our shorter shows, our bridge programming, our panicking about the finals and not being able to do this. Let's get into it. We take your calls in the order in which they arrived, and the first person in, Ange. That's good. He's a good guinea pig. He knows how to do this. Ange, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm good, bro. How you doing? Long time no talk, bro.
I know. Glad to have you back in. Our Tuesday trifecta topic today is reason. What is the single biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Arrogance. Sheer arrogance,
David. Okay. All right.
Smelling AP, as my grandma used to say.
All right. Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
The same reason we about to have Donald Trump for president. They say misery love company, so do stupidity. That's it, and that's all.
Maybe. Who is the most reasonable person in the media today?
Kamal Bell, CNN.
Yeah, he's good.
90 Days of America.
I appreciate
that boy. He got more cojones than me, because I ain't watching nobody burn nothing unless I can hit it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, thank you very, very much. Thank you. We're just moving on. John is in Santa Clara. Next in line, John. What's the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Bruce, my opinion on that is going to be good old-fashioned, your woman picks a fight that somebody else has to fight. So Aisha Curry starting the problem that Curry had to face.
This is not Aisha. Okay. Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Because everybody has an opinion, and they think their opinion matters. So you got people putting out something that's for clickbait. giving everybody an opportunity to put their opinion out there because they'd like to be heard.
Most reasonable person in media.
At this point, I'm going with Rome. Jim Rome.
I appreciate it all. Thank you very much. Most reasonable thing Jim Rome ever did? Decide to use me as a fill-in host for all those.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
I really think it is the springboard to the rest of his success.
But of course.
Scott in Pleasanton. Scott, what is the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Hey, Devin, thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon, Gianna. It has to be with overconfidence.
Most unreasonable sports pundits are very popular. Why?
Because the pessimism exists and people have a hard time with oversuccess.
Most reasonable person in the media, who do you trust?
I'd have to say Bob Costas.
Yeah, I like Bob. Bob, that's the thing, though. Bob gets the heavy-handed treatment now, though. He tries to be too preachy these days. Do you think that's part of it?
It could be part of it, but I like his approach, and sometimes he tries to play the middle ground as much as possible.
I like him. Here's the thing. Even if I disagree with the point he's making, I know that he spent a lot of time thinking about the point he's trying to make, and he's not – I'm not watching him pull out a stupid point right out of his pupkis on live TV and dangling it in front of me as like, oh, look what I've been working on. No, you just pulled that out of your ass, dude.
Yeah.
Hashtag Tebow's the best. Get out of here. Pierre calling from Castro Valley. Pierre, what is the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
LeBron James.
That's pretty good reason. I think that's certainly at the top of my list. Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Because people love echo chambers.
What'd you say?
People love echo chambers.
Yeah, they really do. That's why Twitter's built for the masses. Most reasonable person in the media, who is it?
Who else but Tim Bruce?
Oh, well, thank you very much. I didn't ask that question to get a lot of, like, grand, like, we love you, Damon. No, someone other than me, obviously. Thank you so much, though, for thinking that. I'm blushing. First of all, the most reasonable person on this show is sitting next to me. It's Gianna.
I try. Raw.
There you go. Let's go to Dave in Palo Alto. Dave, what do you think is the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Complacency and nonchalantness on the best player in the team.
Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Because, you know, people on Twitter, they take the bait, and these guys say these things are outlandish. They know it's not true, and everybody wants to – they want your job. They want to be on First Take. So they know that, hey, I can debate this guy, and they know that if they see this guy every morning, you know, it's just going to keep them watching. Even though they can't stand him, they'll watch.
I don't understand that logic. If I hate someone, consuming them is the last thing I want to do. But really, you look around America, we love what we hate. We will tune into the show we hate to complain about it more than tune into the show we love to enjoy it. It's amazing. Yeah. Most reasonable person in the media, Dave, who is it?
Well, other than you, D. Bruce, I would have to say Hubie Brown. I love listening to him do the basketball games. I mean, of all the commentators, anybody that covers and watches the games, Hubie Brown is my favorite.
I love Hubie, too. He is a smart guy. He's got experience. And I love the way he turns a phrase. I'm a big Hubie Brown guy myself. Thanks, Dave. This is Maniac in Oakland. Maniac, why did the Warriors lose? What's the biggest reason?
Number one thing is focus. You lose your focus, you're going to lose the game.
Why do the unreasonable blowhards thrive?
It's just like you just said, hate. If the world loves hate, everything is covered because of hate every time. Anything go on with hate, it's getting covered fast.
Who is the most reasonable person in the media?
I'm going to go with Kenny the Jet Smith. I like how he talks. He keeps Shaq and Charles on point. You know, he always come tell the truth.
He really does. He's more of the moderator than even Ernie is.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Zach in San Francisco. Zach, biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Damn it. I say, it was LeBron James. It had to be LeBron James.
Why do unreasonable blowhards rise to the top of the sports world?
Because people like to hear stupid things come out of people's mouths and reflect on it.
I guess. Most reasonable person in the media?
I like Stuart Scott, man, rest his soul, you know, and, you know, for Yeah, probably Stuart Scott, man. I miss hearing that guy talk.
Yeah, rest in peace to Stuart Scott, indeed. Thank you very much for the calls. And I tell you what, I see we still got 12 blinking lit lines here for the Tuesday trifecta. So we're going to come on back with even more. If you're on hold, we're going to try and get you in as we wrap up our Tuesday trifecta in the next segment. I have a theory on why I think unreasonable sports thrive. And I'm going to call it the Honey Boo Boo Theorem. I will explain the Honey Boo Boo Theorem next. Just, it's like the Pythagorean Theorem, except it lives in a trailer. That's the Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
A lot of people are reacting to this trifecta on Twitter, here on the text line as well. A guy named Al, for the second reason about why we listen to idiot pundits, he says it's groupthink, Damon. Sheeple follow the loudest voice in the absence of reason. And that is actually a proven psychological thing. I can be wrong about something, but if I say it more authoritatively then someone you know is right about something, chances are most people will vote the way I tell them to because I presented it authoritatively. And I made a lot of noise while I was doing it. I really don't understand. I am not one of those people who sit down to watch things I know I'm going to hate. I avoid things that I'm going to hate. If I don't like your album, I don't listen to it. If I don't like your YouTube clip, I'm not going to watch it. If I don't like your TV show, I'm not going to watch it. That's just me. My theory, anyways, as to why, like, a Skip Bayless is so popular is it's the Honey Boo Boo Theorem. There really is a group of people who are so upset about their own situation that they want to look at situations they think that are inferior to them to feel superior about themselves. That must be it. I mean, you're watching Honey Boo Boo. You got the fattest, worst mother in the world.
No doubt.
The woman looks like a thumb. Her whole body is a thumb, a big swollen thumb. But that's not the reason why we don't like her. The fact that she whores out her child daughter, who I wouldn't give a bucket of vomit for her future. Like, I mean, is there any doubt that Honey Boo Boo will end up dead in her 30s of an overeating, dosing something? And the mother will be dead long before then as she remarries the child molester who's, like, it's just a disaster.
It's a train wreck.
And so people, like the train wreck. It's rubbernecking.
It is. It's like when you see an accident on the freeway. You just want to keep looking.
You couldn't pay me to watch something that I know has zero substance. Like, you couldn't pay me to watch a first take on ESPN. Maybe it's because I understand how the magic trick is done.
From your perspective, sure. But from a listener, viewer, they want to be heard. They think now that they have access to these guys that their voice is being heard. Just pawns.
Like,
you're
but
just pawns.
I think that. You yourself must not be the brightest bulb in the chandelier if feeling better than Skip Bayless gets you through the day.
Right, gets you excited.
It's lowest common denominator appeal. And I would hope that there are fewer lowest common denominators in my eye. I would like to think that I had the show that chased the lowest common denominator away from it. That's my goal. My goal is not to be number one or a ratings winner. My goal is to do the most interesting show to the smartest group of people I can find in my audience. Let's get back to the trifecta. We got Ed in San Jose. Ed, reason.
Hey. How are you doing, Dean?
I'm doing great, thank you. What's the single biggest reason the Warriors lost?
LeBron James wanted it more than the entire Warrior team.
Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Oh, haters want to hate, man. They like to dump on people.
Most reasonable person in media.
I'm going to go local. I'm going to go Gary Radnich. He's got 7 sports teams, professional sports teams, and he always keeps it even keel.
Well, because he's not following a lick of it, and he has no idea until he picks. I mean, come on. That's like, Damon, you're really reasonable about the construction of a Sherman tank. Yeah, it's because I don't talk about it. Of course you're going to think I'm reasonable. I know nothing about it, and I avoid the topic like the plague. Yeah. Again, if you go to Gary Radnich to get your sports news,
you must be the dumbest of all your friends, or certainly you're the least informed, or you're a 97-year-old woman watching Kron. And I would say that if I liked the guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's just useless. I know what useless sounds like. That's exactly what it sounds like. And I guarantee you, he loves Honey Boo Boo. Surmise what you will. Cal. What's up, Cal?
How you doing?
Doing great. What's the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Man, the biggest reason, I keep watching this game after game, especially the last two games, and it's just no one drives to the basket. And most of the times, that, I mean, they're not driving and kicking it out. Most of these threes are being taken. They're not passing the ball enough, and there's no one down underneath them to rebound.
Why?
That's the reason they lost, and Steve Kerr could have done
that. That's more than one reason. Thank you. Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Nobody can resist denouncing a buffoon like Skip or Stephen A.
Denouncing a buffoon really is a tempting thing. Most reasonable person in media?
I'd have to go with Tom Jackson from ESPN. You know, back in the day when one of his coworkers was making statements that he felt was racist, he didn't complain, he didn't gripe, he just resigned.
Who did?
The next day, they brought him back and got rid of the guy.
Oh, that's right. That was the Rush Limbaugh, Donovan McNabb thing, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you, man. Adam in Dublin. Adam, what do you think is the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
Well, everybody's taking my answers. I was going to say you had intelligent callers until the Radnich comment, but I'm going to go complacency, focus, lack of that. But then I think there were some underlying injuries, or Steph wasn't himself well at the curveball.
Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Not to salt Andy's game, but it's the Trump effect, the shock and awe. And then just like Gianna said, there's why we got rubberneckers on the road. They want to see, for whatever reason, disaster.
Most reasonable person in the media?
Star Van Pelt, I think, is a pretty sophisticated, well-balanced reporter. And a close second to him is Dan Bibley.
You know, I will agree with both, and I like both. I like the way you work, kid. Dan Dibley! Thank you very much. Appreciate the phone call. Vera in San Leandro. Vera, what do you think's the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
It was the last two games to stick with the combination of Barnes and Ezeli, who were totally useless.
Why?
And they should have changed them after the game six.
Yeah, I agree with you. Why do you think unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
They want the fame that comes with being on the internet, because people listen to loud voices nowadays because of Twitter and all of this. And so as a consequence, nobody listens to anybody that's reasonable. They're viewed as weak.
So
you got to yell.
Right. The most reasonable person in the media is?
Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. I love him.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Mark in Oakland. Mark, biggest reason the Warriors lost?
The reason the Warriors lost. Okay. Manipulative, self-serving, officiating NBA management culminating in a completely blown goaltending call in the last 2 minutes.
You worked on that. I appreciate it. Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
On a kind of serious note, because people from abusive, dysfunctional families are drawn to chaos and controversy because it feels familiar.
Maybe. Look, it's got to be some psychological pull. Maybe that's part of it. Who's the most reasonable person in media?
It's kind of an outlier. I'm not even sure if he's still around, but whenever he was on, I really liked what he would say. It just seemed like he said it just like it was in golf, Johnny Miller.
I loved Johnny Miller. And you know what? I was also a Billy Packer guy. Two of the grumpiest old men who ever worked in sports. But they were usually right about what they were saying. They just said it in grumpy old man ways. Final call of the day. Idris and Hayward. Idris, we got to wrap it up with you, and I'm sorry to everyone else who didn't get in here. What's the biggest reason the Warriors lost?
The biggest reason was the side effects of the drugs they gave Curry after he got injured, because he was high the whole postseason.
Why do unreasonable sports pundits thrive?
Because it's comedy. When I watch First Take, I'm laughing every other time. It's entertainment. It comes in all forms and shapes and sizes.
See, that to me is not entertaining. I don't understand it. I don't understand the appeal. The most reasonable person in the media.
Chris Bazaar, ESPN.
Thank you very much. Who is that? Chris Bazaar? Oh, Chris Broussard.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like Chris Bizarre. I don't know. Hold off just for a second. Hold off just for a second. Because I just want to make this point, and then we're going to get to John Morosi. We're going to wrap up with a little baseball conversation as we walk you right up to the A's dugout show and Chris Townsend coming up at 6:15. The single best thing about the newspaper was also its downfall. The best thing about a newspaper was its actual size. Due to its size, its physical entity, its being, there was only so much information you could put in there. This is also what eventually brings down the newspaper, because again, the minute your newspaper is printed, it's a historical document. Nothing new can go in. Nothing can be removed. But there was a beauty to it, and you had to qualify yourself to earn the precious few inches that that newspaper delivered. The precious few inches kept the idiots out of the margins. You had to qualify yourself as a journalist, as someone with integrity, as someone who really did have a point to make and share, to get into those precious few inches in a newspaper. The internet goes to infinity in all directions, and we got room for every single blithering idiot who can formulate a sentence. Which, like the size of a newspaper, is kind of the best thing about it and the worst thing about it. And unfortunately, there are no qualifiers for you're allowed to write on the internet. I mean, you had to first be a journalist, you had to go to school, you had to have an apprenticeship, you had to have an internship, then you were a junior reporter, and then a staffer, then maybe a columnist. Now all of a sudden you're a beat writer, and boom, now you're in charge. You know, like,
right. You had to earn it.
Schmuck walks into Apple Store, buys iPhone. You're in the media. That's the equation today. There's no editor. There's no gatekeeper. When we come on back, a guy who certainly qualifies to be in the media, and he's no blowhard, John Morosi. He joins me next. Thanks to everyone, though, who called in for the trifecta. That was a good one. That was a fun one. That was interesting. More interesting than Honey Boo Boo, anyways, here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Great to be with you here. It is A's baseball coming up in just a little bit. A's and Brewers. What'd you say? The Brewers are at the Coliseum for the first time since when?
In 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Brew Crew at the Coliseum tonight. Sonny Gray pitching. Feels like that might be something that happens, you know, less and less and less. The opportunity to see Sonny Gray pitching in A's uniform. Is this something that is slipping quickly through the hourglass of time, or is he really going to be here for a few years? To talk about that, to talk about everything that's going on in baseball, including the fact the Giants are getting back over the Pirates today. 8-0 they lead right now. Our friend John Morosi here talking baseball. John, always good to have you on. Sonny Gray pitches tonight. Are GMs in opposing markets now watching with great interest, or are Sonny's struggles enough to maybe back that interest up a little?
Well, Damon, I think it's both. Certainly his track record suggests that if the A's decide to be sellers of the deadline, which I think a lot of us expect will be the case, that there is going to be interest in Gray. However, for this deal to happen, for the A's to feel like they're getting the proper value back, and for other teams to feel comfortable giving up those top prospects, he simply has to pitch better. I mean, over his last eight starts, Damon, here are the numbers. 40 and a third innings pitched, only 29 strikeouts, 16 walks, which is not what you want, and a 7.36 ERA. Just one quality start in his last eight. That simply is not good enough. Now, I realize there was the injury mixed in there, but the plain fact is that the health component is a huge factor in deciding which pitchers you want to acquire if you're a contending ball club. And right now, frankly, Gray has neither been healthy or effective enough for teams that feel comfortable, I believe, giving up their top prospects to acquire him.
It would be a track record buy, not a performance buy, if it did indeed happen. If you want performance, just look at the San Francisco Giants. Even though they're banged up, even though Peavy and Kane remain pitching question marks, even though the bullpen's not as strong as it used to be, even though we got brand new injuries to look at every day, this team is streaking in almost historic fashion for the Giants. They've already enjoyed two winning streaks of eight games or more. They might have been on another one, but not for a tough luck loss for Mad Bum last night, 1-0. And a little revenge being exacted, it's now 9-0 Giants over the Pirates late in that game. Are you surprised to see the Giants just treading water and playing so well, even though they got as many issues as anybody?
They really are amazing. And where have we heard this story before, Damon? For the Giants, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It was true in 2010. It was true in 2012. It was true in 2014. Here we are, 2016. It's true again. And if we are surprised, we shouldn't be. Because this is how they have been, again, for this entire decade under Bruce Bochy. You look at the numbers up and down. Is any one player having an MVP season? No, probably not. But again, the cohesiveness, the way they play together, that has won the day. And the big question I have, Damon, and again, I think it's a great question to ask Bobby Evans and certainly the Giants people going forward, is, okay, you've got this great mentality, this great chemistry as a team. How does that shape the way you're going to go out there and find guys at the trade market? Because I certainly have seen the reports about Ryan Braun. I was told today, yes, they've been asking the Brewers and having some trade conversations. Is it about Braun specifically? That part's unclear. But I look at this and say, a guy making $20 million a year on a multi-year deal who's had some injury issues, especially to his arms and hands, which is really a concern for power hitters. It seems like to me, Damon, the smarter play and the more Giants play would be someone like, whether it's a Todd Frazier or a John Jay, someone who is a less expensive sort of attainable asset who has that, you know, great clubhouse guy reputation. That seems to be more of what the Giants have been all about. That was the Marco Scudero deal, the Freddie Sanchez deal, and so on. All those deals they've made this decade, Damon, they fit that mold and not the Braun mold. So, again, I'm curious to see where this all goes because the Braun move does not seem to be a classic Giants trade based on their track record.
No, it doesn't. He does not fit that Cody Ross, you got to be kidding me,
exactly,
that guy type of model. Look, I could ask you about Clayton Kershaw, but we'd just be wasting everybody's time because the answer is yes, he's really good. So let me ask you about Yasiel Puig, who's about to return to the outfield mix for the Dodgers, but it feels like the honeymoon is officially over on him. Might he be on the market?
Yes, I think he is right now, if he plays well enough. Because you look at the way the outfield at-bats have been distributed recently, Damon, and Trace Thompson's becoming a star.
He can play.
He's becoming a legit star. And Jock Peterson, another home run for him last night. He has played better, more consistently than I thought he would. So if you've got a young guy in center field who's playing well and Trace Thompson, a potential star in the making, playing right field, there's no room for Puig. There's just no room for him right now. And it's not a, you know, so much of the talk with Puig for a long time was, well, is it a question about his style or his personality? No, he has not hit enough to play every day for the Dodgers. Simple, full stop. That's the end of the statement. And the question now is going to be, does he play on a limited look, Damon, to even pique the interest of other teams? Now, I do think enough organizations out there, good scouting reports on him, they'll buy into the athleticism, they'll believe their culture is enough to help him succeed, but I think he needs a change of scenery because, A, it's just not working out there, but, B, there's no avenue for him to get back in the lineup unless somebody else gets hurt. No, by the way, at some point in the second, they should probably get Andre Ethier back. So I think the Dodgers overall, you mentioned Kershaw. This is actually statistically Kershaw's best season ever, which is scary to say, but it's true.
Right,
and even despite that, Damon, I look at the Dodgers right now, and unless they make some serious moves at the deadline, they are not as good of a ball club cohesive-wise, just chemistry-wise, than the Giants are, and they're probably looking at a one-game wild card. That being said, they'll have Kershaw on the mound for it, so it's a pretty good wild card chance to have. But I just see them as being a step below right now where the San Francisco Giants are.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Kershaw might be a step above Pedro's best season, and that's the best pitch season of any life I've lived. I want to thank you very much. Always, brother John Morosi. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks so much, Damon. Always great talking to you. We'll talk again next week. Thank you.
The same thing with you. Thanks so much to all of you. Everyone who called in for the trifecta today, that was real good. We had a ton of great calls before it. Thank you so much for hanging out with me and Gianna and Button Vixen today. Thank you so much to Danny and Connor. Thanks to John and Grant, our interns, who didn't break anything and actually did a pretty good job on a heavy phone day. Good job, boys. Thank you to Keith Law, Tony Bruno for stiffing us. We're going to talk to him tomorrow. Brian Windhorst, John Morosi, all you trifecta callers. That was a lot of fun. Chris Townsend and A's Baseball. The Dugout Show is next. In the meantime, thanks for listening. And remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.